The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Conservative Voice here on WWDB, 860 AM. I'm Don Beuschel Jr. here, joined with my friend Stan Casaccio from the Don't Back Down.
I'm still your friend.
Yeah, you're still my friend. Joanne is having a fun time in Florida, so Stan is being very nice to fill in for today. So before we begin, I just wanted to say that this portion of the show is brought to you by Salvatore's Cucina at 1150 Bristol Oxford Valley Road in Levittown, Pennsylvania. Phone number 215-547-7000. Sal's is a BYOB establishment, and it is fantastic Italian food. We were there with dinner with our weekly guest, Senator Mastriano, and his wife, Rebbe.
You never invite me.
Well, let's be,
I'm Italian, too.
Well, you'll have to come, you know? I mean, it's okay.
Jeez, I'm like second class now.
So, you know, one of the things, Stan, that has been going on is there's a lot of talk about election integrity in the state. We've had Senator Mastriano has talked about it numerous times. We've had Tony Shoup and Karen Taylor on from Audit the Vote, Dr. Frank, so forth and so on, but very few people are willing to do something about it. And our guest today, Senator Doug Mastriano, is one of the few people that actually have been doing something about it. Senator Mastriano, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on. And yeah, that South Italian restaurant is magnificent. Stan, you got to go.
I got to go. Well, I'm waiting for an invite, so we'll see what happens.
There might be a reason why I don't invite him.
Yeah, there might be a reason. He hates my jokes. And by the way, do you know what the economists and plumbers have in common, Senator?
No idea.
They both handled gross domestic products.
So Senator, obviously you have been probably one of the lone voices in the state legislature that has been advocating for some sort of election reform in the state since November of 2020. One of the few that have basically, for lack of a better word, been willing to stick your neck out and say that not only did something go on, but the election was probably stolen. And so you have taken some what I consider extraordinary steps to ensure that the citizens of Pennsylvania do have some. And you've put together what I think we want to call an election integrity package. So why don't we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. And it's interesting, of course, you know, I really don't like to talk about competitors, especially when they're single digits. But
yeah,
one of my competitors who had the power to do election reform the past 2 years, who stood in the way of election reform, who stood in my way and shut down the forensic investigation, which is nothing but a fraud at this point here. Nothing's happened. And so suddenly, because he wants people votes, he comes out with a package, you know, like he really cares. You know what? Talk is cheap. I'm really tired of politicians. You know, it'd be one thing if it was a new guy, a fresh face off the street, but this guy stood in the way of getting to the bottom of what happened and securing our elections. So with that being said, you know, we have had a series of pieces of legislation on the table that gentleman has refused to run. And he's, by the way, told us to move on. We got to stop looking back kind of thing. This is not the kind of truthful, honest people we need to have in office. Among the package is this constitutional amendment for voter ID. And I'm co-primed with Senator Judy Ward on that. She's west of me a bit here in the district. And I think it's written in such a way, additionally, I'm being a constitutional amendment, I think it would survive a challenge from the liberal Pennsylvania State Supreme Court.
And that would be SB 735, I believe it is, constitutional amendment to mandate voter ID for all forms of voting. So that is obviously, I believe, if I remember correctly, that has, what, 75-80% of the voters, whether Democrat or Republican, support that in the state?
Yeah, and that's another thing, and I'm glad you brought that up, Don. Of course, you know, the establishment, the Rhino's like, you know, we, you know, so Mastriano, he's going to win the primary, but can he win, you know, Philadelphia, can he win, you know, over Democrats? Yes, hell yes, because the Democrats actually agree with me on more issues than not, and that's another one where they agree. They agree across the state that they prefer voter ID.
Well, not that I want to get off of this subject, but that's a good point that you just brought up. So our friend that we're talking about happened to be on a competitor's radio show yesterday, and he basically let it slip out that one of the reasons he was quote-unquote going to jump out before President Trump convinced him to stay in, like I'm sure that happened. But they're forming a coalition of other candidates to stop you from getting the nomination because you quote-unquote cannot win the general election. I mean, to admit that on the air is shocking to me.
It's not surprising. They did that to Trump too.
Yeah.
a populist candidate like you, Senator, who the populace appreciates, is always objected to by the establishment rhinos in both parties.
But the funny thing is, they very rarely will admit that in public. So.
But, yeah, I agree. And birds of a feather do flock together, that old saying goes. So, you know, you see these people flocking together because they had disdain for the people. It's all about control and power and you know, lording over us rather than actually serving the people. You know, that gentleman's been in politics for more than two decades, took his daddy's seat. His daddy was there for two decades, so it's a dynasty. And he has a terrible legacy he's left behind. He's done nothing but make Pennsylvania worse, and it's a darn shame.
Well, you know, so, again, not that I want to give anything to somebody that's polling at 1% or 2%, but you know how some of your opponents were making hay of the fact that, quote-unquote, none of your colleagues stood up for you when he took away your Senate seat or your chairman's seat and stuff like that? Well, you know what? I actually think they did stand up for you because when they rewrote the maps, all of a sudden he didn't have a district to run in. So maybe they did stand up for you. They just didn't come out and vocally say it.
It's funny. I was talking to one of these mainstream reporters, and I actually one of the you know more decent ones, if I can say that. And he asked me a similar question, and I said, "Did you not realize what happened in November?" He's like, "What?" I'm like, "You cover politics for a job, and you don't understand what my colleagues did in retaliation against Jake's behavior towards me. They had disdain for him." And I said, "Tell me any time in history when the leader of the Senate was drawn out of his district. He has no district to run in. I mean, it's like." Guys missed that?
And that's the thing. It's like, you know, politics is such a subtle game. I was talking to Calvin Tucker about this on the way in today, and Calvin is the assistant director of the Pennsylvania GOP. And I asked him, I said, you know, and I go to Calvin because he's a good historian on stuff politics, and I asked him, I said, in the history of Pennsylvania, has that ever happened where the president of the Senate was drawn out of where he no longer had a job? And Calvin said, no, that's never happened. So it's interesting how that all played out. So,
and I think there's no greater justice than that happening. So my colleagues, Jake didn't even give them an opportunity to weigh in. He came in, you know, unilaterally announced these decisions. And by the way, it's reversed. I'm welcome back into the caucus. My colleagues made that happen. They're very upset with Jake for a multiple array of reasons, but that was manifest that he has no district left over. It's, you know, his plan was to knock out another Republican senator so he can have a more conservative district.
Right.
So they're like, hell no, you're done.
As my grandfather used to say, what goes around comes around.
Yeah, but Ronald Reagan had it the best when he said, both politicians and diapers need to be changed often for the same reason.
So there's three other bills as part of this Senate integrity package. So SB 884. The constitutional amendment to roll back Act 77. So again, why don't you first explain to the listeners exactly how stuff becomes a constitutional amendment and the steps that you and others are taking to make sure that regardless of which way the political winds blow, the voters will have a choice, a way to weigh in on this.
So a constitutional amendment, of course, has to be run in two consecutive sessions. A session is a two-year period. And so this is going to be the last year of this session period. So what happens is it has to pass through its respective committee in the Senate. So this would be state committee, and then to the floor of the Senate. And when it passes the Senate, then it goes over to the House through their state committee, through the floor of the House. And then you have to repeat, in this case, next year. And then say we get it all done by January of next year, and that's the beginning of our next session. And it will go on the ballot the following May for the people to vote on. And that will be, if they vote in the affirmative, just like when we took away Governor Wolf's powers, then it becomes effective the following November, that November.
And just to be clear, because, you know, I think you answered this fantastically. If anybody has a chance, you know, please watch Senator Mastriano's interview with Chris Stegall. It was... What was the word I used? Presidential. That's the word I used. You answered every question in a very concise manner. And so when they bring up this whole Act 77 thing, one of the things I always try to say to people is that what you voted on was not what happened in November of 2020. And I think people need to understand that. And they don't. They're looking for talking points. We have the guy that lives in mommy's basement, wants to make a big deal out of this stuff. And you know, where was his voice in October of 2019 when he was supposedly against Act 77? It wasn't there. Again, these are political opportunists that only speak out on something that they think they can use to run for governor, just like Jake the Snake did. So, again... I don't want to bang this point home, but Act 77 was not the reason that President Trump lost Pennsylvania. It's just like when the Democrats want to use guns as a reason for violence. It's not the tool. It's the people that use the tool. And in this case, it was Governor Wolf, Secretary of State Buchvar, and ultimately the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. I mean, am I on target here, Senator?
That's exactly right, and it's funny, the PAC and dark money funded competitor of mine that Donald Trump called a coward, actually, when he sent that pitiful groveling letter to Trump last June, he actually had it right. He said, you know, Donald Trump, you are right to have concerns because the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court changed the law, and it was co-opted by Wolf and Secretary of State Buchvar. But it's funny, he knows the truth, as Donald Trump called him the coward. He knows the truth, but now he's running political ads that echo the talking points of that little boy that lives in mom's basement. By the way, his voice was voting to bring in Dominion voting machines into his county. He's seconded that motion with his Democrat friends.
Exactly.
So, but it's funny how people, they know the truth, but they're willing to lie to get your vote. And that just betrays the point that we don't want any of these other candidates who will lie, cheat, and steal to get your vote. But when they get in office, they're going to destroy Pennsylvania.
Well, it's funny that the former U.S. District Attorney didn't have the courage to stand up for the integrity of the vote in Pennsylvania because he was following orders. I don't think that defense works so good at the Nuremberg trials.
No, it didn't.
Especially when this guy runs on being a Marine. You know, he spent a couple of years in the Marine Corps. I'm a Marine and I follow orders. Was that a lawful order there? You know, it was not. You know, Jake constantly told me to stop and tried to block me. This Army guy knew the right thing to do. So to hide behind some kind of lame excuse basically was cowardice. Because you imagine that after my hearing on 25 November, we just had the momentum, we had the energy, we had everything with us. And little did we know, you know, in the Southeast, this district attorney had the ability to follow up, and he choked. He chickened out. If he would have stood up that day, that moment that he had a chance to, he'd have been a great hero. But he stumbled, and I was left holding the ball. And so there's nothing but cowardice there. And Donald Trump's right. I mean, I was surprised when it came out, but he called it as it is.
One of the things I know people ask the question, so we pass a constitutional amendment eliminating Act 77, removing Act 77. How do we know elections will have integrity after that? That's the problem.
So that's why we need to move all. So I have four bills there that are designed to shore up our elections. You know, for first one, of course, that we discussed was bringing in voter ID. That's like a no-brainer. Of course, the Democrats think their demographics are too stupid to get an ID. I disagree with them, and I think that's very insulting to any group within a Democratic party.
I think Kathy Barnett said it best when she says, "I go to my hairdresser, and I don't know one black person that doesn't have an ID and can't get one." And she said, "I'm really upset about that because, you know, we're not stupid people." She goes, "Come on, give me some break." But that's the way liberals look at things. They want everybody to be a victim.
Yes. So voter ID. And then second off, repealing Act 77 because it was compromised by the Democrats. That's a fact. Even my competitor, who says something to the contrary now, actually admitted that in his terrible letter to Donald Trump, you know, begging for Trump's forgiveness for chickening out. Another one is SB 573. We need to increase transparency. So Senate Bill 573 is a Poll Watcher Protection Act. It will actually increase the number of poll watchers allowed in and increase the criminal penalties if you deprive a poll watcher from access to a polling station.
Well, that
and finally,
I'm sorry, I wanted to jump on that one.
Yeah, that's an important one.
Because that one, really, especially in the city of Philadelphia, where voter intimidation happens constantly.
Yeah.
So this would basically give teeth to people to be able to stand up to that. Is that basically what this is designed for?
That's precisely. We all saw the video of that one Republican, that skinny, small guy, you know, with his voter pass to go to the poll. He had the training. He was credentialed to be a poll watcher in Philadelphia. And that gigantic, you know, huge man came out and kind of pushed him out. And that would make that a crime. And it would also bring a lot of heat down to that polling station as well.
So the fourth component here, well, 4A, 4B, and I think this is the one that really will bring this all together, is SB 819 and 821. And that basically removes the Secretary of State from oversight of elections and establishes the Election Commission. Let's expand on that, talk about that, but really, what is the importance of that? And let's tie this back into what Secretary Bookvar did in 2020.
Yeah, So the goal is it was actually restore the legislative body's oversight of elections. And I don't know why in Pennsylvania, what few powers the General Assembly has, they've handed that off to the governor or the governor's offices. For instance, the oversight of elections in 1938 was handed off to the Secretary of State, as well as the certification of electors. So, you know, when you know, all these right-wing shows were online saying, you know, General Assembly, do your job. Well, we would need a law. We have to change the law to restore the powers that we have constitutionally since it was handed off. But anyway, this would restore the balance where the General Assembly would have oversight directly constitutionally. We'd restore our powers because the Secretary of State is appointed by the governor. And sadly, Governor Wolf has done nothing but appoint ideologues, whether it's Dr. Levine in the health department or Secretary Bookvar, completely incompetent, radical Democrat operative. And she bungled things left and right, but she also used her powers to favor the Democrats. We know for a fact that we had two hearings in the state committee the past couple weeks. And guess what? Zuckbucks and all this other outside money was used five times more in Democrat counties to get out the vote. They hired Democrat consultants. They put offices downtown Philadelphia and elsewhere in Democrat strongholds. They hired people to get out the vote. They paid for ballot boxes, which is not in Act 77, by the way, and that's right. The creation of the Supreme Court. And because of this abuse of power and tipping the scales heavily in favor of the Democrats, we got a huge problem in Pennsylvania. So those two Senate bills will restore the balance constitutionally.
There's only one thing that I would have added to any of these bills, which are all important, is the fact that every voter services office in any county or city or in Pennsylvania should have at least three members in that as the heads of those districts, a Republican, Democrat, and an independent, because you cannot trust a one-party rule in these areas because there's always ways of usurping it. And the other thing is that the voter rolls should be updated on a monthly basis for people who have passed away. Very easy. You just go to probate court. You can find out who they are. Get them off the rolls because part of the issue that what they did was they packed those voter rolls so they could get all these mail-out ballots. So there was a real conspiracy here. Right. And I think years to come, it's going to prove how badly the Democratic Party acted against the people and the interest of the people.
Well, one of the things, Senator, you have addressed this cleaning up of the voter rolls at some point. I seem to vaguely remember a discussion on this issue.
Yeah, so I think it was 2 weeks ago in the state committee that I introduced and spoke of, and it passed along party lines, sadly, compelling the removal of dead within a week and not a month.
Right.
Because right now it's so long that people forget. And the fact of the matter is there were 22,000 dead on the rolls in November 2020. The month before, Bukvar and the Secretary of State were actually ordered by a court to remove them, and they refused. They ignored the order. And so the dead were removed afterwards. We're able to trace at least 8,000 or so of those dead actually voted. And this is a problem. You know, this is why people in Pennsylvania struggle with their vote counts.
Well, one of the things that you brought up, and we were talking about the money disparity. So in Republican counties, the money basically was like, I think it was 59 cents per person. And in a heavily Democratic county like Philadelphia County, it was over $3 and something a person. Is that those figures in the ballpark?
Yeah, that's close. Berks County was around 59 cents per person, and Philadelphia was just under $3 per person. So you get five times more. So you could see how it's tilted heavily, and that was by design.
Right, and the population difference, and multiply that by that number, and you can see the disparity. Of the amount
even,
of money.
Even Stevie Wonder could see this is a problem.
Now that I like that. That's a stand joke.
Oh boy, is that salt?
I'll accept that. I might use it too, as a matter of fact. pass it off. I will tell you this. I was very upset to find out my aunt, who is a staunch conservative, voted for Biden in the last campaign. Of course, she died in 2019, but that doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, it's funny how the dead suddenly vote Democrat.
Yes, I know.
So,
they were dying to vote that way anyhow, right?
let's address one of the things that the establishment likes to criticize. So they would say that a Doug Mastriano cannot win a general election, that a Doug Mastriano cannot convince Philadelphia voters or enough Philadelphia voters to carry the state. Now, we know that's not true because I believe that Stacey Garrity proved that and Tim DeFore proved that to be inaccurate. But when you look at what you stand for and what you bring to the people, and I think Kathy Barnett brings this up greatly, how do you combat the establishment saying what they're saying? In other words, what makes you believe that Doug Mastriano can win the state, and what is the things that are the core beliefs that you bring to the table that will convince the voters of a city like Philadelphia or a city like Pittsburgh to say, hey, this guy is the guy for us?
Well, I mean, and you were part of this. So petition drive comes around. We're required to collect 2,000 signatures, and the people in our movement collected 29,000 signatures to put me on the ballot. I mean, this is the people's movement. So talk is cheap. These people, the establishment will say whatever they have to say to maintain power. They don't care about you or your values. If they did, we'd be moving pro-life legislation. We would have voted on numerous packages for voting reform. There must be 20 bills on voting reform, and they've all sat. And that's the establishment, that they're not going to do anything for you. And so on our side, while these signatures are being collected, a record for Republicans, by the way, you know, literally thousands of people are switching parties. Last night, I was endorsed by the Latinos in Pennsylvania. And in that meeting, nine people converted to Republican to vote for me. I mean, which other candidate can say that they have people at meetings, you know, switching parties on the spot because they like what they see?
Just as a rule of thumb, I'd like to say that every time they tell somebody can't win against somebody else, that person usually wins because these people are so out of touch with reality. It's in their own little cubicle that they're there. So I would say that that's really an endorsement of how strong you are. If they're telling people that, that means how weak they are.
Exactly.
Because they never tell you how they can win.
You know, that's right, Stan. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I know we've discussed this before. They said similar things about Ronald Reagan. They said the same thing about Ron DeSantis. They said the same thing about Stacey Garrity. And we can just keep on going down the list of Republican champions. So the bottom line is, that's not true. And if you look at what we stand for, we have a statewide movement, and it's not just a lot of people that look like me. It's across all demographics in the state. And they see somebody whose values reflect theirs. Their party has gone, the Democrat Party, has gone so extreme left that people downtown Philly don't feel safe. They see faces like AOC talking ridiculous nonsense, wanting to tax us to oblivion, wanting us, you know, to break our backs. People are having trouble making ends meet under the Biden administration, and they see somebody who stands for just good old American values.
Well, it's the one thing, when we had the meeting with you and Don and me, and we had the black clergy from Philadelphia and minority clergy, we had the Hispanic clergy there, and discussion of it. The one thing was clear in these huge parishes and congregations that they have, we all believe in something greater than us, than the state. And that is something that is very important. And when you believe in something greater than you, that makes this universe exist, you can call it God, whatever you want to do, whatever you want to call it, then there's a certain level of integrity and honesty that people feel about you and about these people. So I think it's important that one of the distinction is the Democratic Party has really become the godless party, as far as I can see, and they only believe in the power of the state. States are the only thing that's going to make you happy, and we all know that's not true.
That's true.
And that came out in the last presidential Democrat convention where they came out, and when they said the pledge, they took under God out of our pledge.
That's absolutely amazing.
It's not only that, but quite honestly, what I took out of that meeting, and I was honored to be in the room with you guys on that meeting, was that you made a pledge to those guys, to those pastors, that not only will you campaign in Philadelphia, but you will not forget Philadelphia once you become governor, that you will come back to do and help them in the state. And that's the thing that
every one of them wanted the senator there, wanted them to come to speak to the congregation. They'd even the Hispanics said, we'll have the interpreters there. We want you there.
Exactly. So the real point is—
You better start using Babbel on your phone and get some words, because I'm trying to do that now.
Well, the real point is that we as a party— and we have to take responsibility for this, is that we've abandoned these people over the years. And so the thing that I hear mostly from them is our congregation believes in, and our communities believe in, conservative values and principles, but we vote Democrat because the Republicans don't even come and talk to us. And so you've made that commitment. And so, again, you have a family background in Philadelphia. Rebbe has a family background. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about that and what your plans are, you know, without revealing any secrets, but, you know, what your plans are to help the people of Philadelphia.
Yeah, so, you know, Philly's near and dear to the nation's heart, and it's to mine as well. And I'm glad that God has given me a background where I don't have to make this crap up. When my Quaker family, so on my dad's mom's side, she's English blood and quite Quaker background, Richardson's and Holland's Head. You know, they settled in Philadelphia, and eventually my great-grandfather moved out to Newtown, where he had his clock shop, which is now a flower shop on South Main Street. It's great. It was great to be in there a couple months ago. My great-grandfather, when he came from Sicily in the early 1900s, he moved into a house with a bunch of other Italian immigrants, owned by a Borelli family, and he worked on the railroad in Philadelphia. I mean, and Rebbe and I met outside of Philly on the main line off of 30. I mean, there's just so much depth and background. We went to college there. I proposed to her there. I mean, it's fantastic. So my goal for Philly, and I have uncles that are, you know, that were in a police department in Philly, the Rileys, good Irish background. I mean, very stereotypical police officers. It was great. But, you know, that's nice for that on my family's side. But for the nation, I mean, Philly symbolizes so much. I mean, that's where it all began. The nation was birthed in Philadelphia. And that we have Philadelphia being run into the ground, it's a place where people don't want to live. You don't feel safe if you're a couple blocks off of these protected areas. I mean, that's unconscionable to me, and it's an embarrassment.
Well, one of the things that I think that is important to the people of Philadelphia is part of, obviously, having safe and secure neighborhoods where they can go out and their children can go out in the street and play and things like that. But another thing that you bring to the table, which is near and dear to the people of Philadelphia, is school choice. And so let's talk about that, because that is essential to your plan of improving education, not only in the state, but really in the cities. Let's get into that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, so, and that's another thing, you know, so, you know, are my values too conservative? That's an old chestnut book that both the media and the rhinos will book that are out there. And no, they're not. You know, what do I share in common, Philly? Well, a share for a desire to be secure and be able to live peacefully and to live, you know, life as they see fit. And all of the folks there agree with me on that. And another one, of course, is the family values that we share. But then finally, of course, is school choice. 88%. I said that 88% of Philadelphia in a poll of the people that reside there, they want school choice. They're locked in with their families. They want their kids just like any person does in a state. The residents of Philadelphia want their kids to be able to succeed. And are being forced into broken school systems based off a zip code. And the moms and dads in Philadelphia, just like anyone else in the state here, but more so them, because they're in a bad situation with these schools, they want to choose where their kids go to school. And so my plan, and I'm going to fight hard for this here, and I'm going to need everyone's help on this, because obviously we're going to take on a lot of money from the school unions. And by the way, the teachers aren't the villains in the story. I mean, a lot of teachers out there are fantastic. But school choice, and that's part of our problem in our part of the state with property taxes, because the largest sum of money out of property taxes paying rent to the government is for schools. But we're funding a system that's $30 billion a year. That's just according to a 2020 NEA report, National Education Association report, 12th most expensive in the nation, 28th in product and output. That's terrible. And that's before Wolf's COVID shutdown. So you imagine how we're going to rate after that comes out. But we're funding a system with the first $1 billion does not even cover the pay of the superintendents and principals. We have 500 school districts across the state. That's a lot of principals and superintendents. First billion doesn't even cover that. So we're funding a broken system. So the way we fix it is bring, imagine this, competition to the system, school choice.
And common sense.
Yeah, that too. It's really... You're right, Stan. You know, a lot, all these resolutions we talk about, they're really not that hard. We just need people who are actually going to, you know, follow up and do something about it. So it's going to be sort of like a program of, I guess, a sort of scholarship. You call it what you want, but the money should be assigned to the students and the parents or the guardians, you know, choose where they want to send their kids. And it could be a school in a different district. I mean, it could be a local school if it's a good school. It could be cyber school, even homeschool. Your religious school or your cyber school, you pick the school. Now, for homeschool parents, I mean, some of them are concerned, you know, hey, Doug, there's strings attached. You take, you know, state money. Okay, then don't take the money. That'll be fantastic. That'll be a net savings for us. But in the end, I'd sure like the parents to choose. And instead of the kids being stuck in a district, okay, let me give you a vignette. I was with Latinos from Astriano last month in Harrisburg. And one of the parents told me there's a large school with you know, several thousand kids in high school. And when they graduate, only like a third actually are literate. I mean, that's unconscionable to me. One of the young ladies, a sister and brother team, I think she's around 10 years old, maybe 12. She sang the national anthem, and her mom grabbed me afterwards and said, you know, we believe in you because of school choice, because my daughter, who's, you know, who's right there, she can't read or write. I mean, this is bizarre to me.
It's totally – see, you hit the nail on the head when you just said competition, because – what are you afraid of? Okay, if competition actually makes people better, it makes businesses better. And really, when you think about it, education is, in a way, a business, because those folks are getting a salary. Now it's paid by the state and it's paid by taxpayer dollars. So we should be able to have a choice based on the results that they are putting out in those particular buildings. And unfortunately, some of your competitors are in bed with unions, union leadership, I should say, not union rank and file. And there is a disconnect between union rank and file and union leadership. And I hear this all the time when I talk to union members who say, you know, I'm tired of paying union dues, and then my union leadership donate, and these are conservatives, and then my union leadership donates all my money to Democratic candidates. Okay, so they're not being represented. So, I mean, some of the best tap dancing I've seen was one of your opponents on the stage at the PLC when asked a question about doing away with prevailing wage for public works jobs. I'm still waiting for that answer. So, I say this to people all the time. There's a difference between the hardworking men and women who are members of a union and the union leadership that steals their money to further their own political gains. And again, am I off on that, or is that something that you see too?
And I see that as well. When I was young and before I was commissioned in the Army, I actually was a member of a union. And this is going to sound very stereotypical, but it sure is true. I mean, we had our union boss come down, you know, pay their obligatory visit to the commoners, you know, to us paying into their wealth. And the dude came down with a beautiful suit and, you know, magnificent expensive sunglasses, you know, the heavy Italian accent, you know, like, you know, Philadelphia kind of accent. And his name was Nick. I'm like, you can't make this stuff up. So.
No, having been in that business for 50 years, I could tell you some real windbags or stories about the jewelry.
Well,
when you think
that
right. But, you know, when you think about, you know, even Roosevelt, that's Franklin Roosevelt, was opposed to the public sector being in union control because it really becomes its own form of government to a degree. And they can impose things, they can do things that's really not beneficial for the community as a whole. So part of the reform in our school system, besides school choice, has to be that you do not have to pay dues into the teachers' union, and you have to be allowed. If you pass the grade, you can become a teacher. The other thing that I think would be very beneficial, because a lot of our teachers that come in the classrooms are these young people who have all this ideology running around in their head. I believe that a great opening for senior citizens, in fact, when I lived in Hawaii on one of the islands, they looked for volunteers of people who were retired to come in and teach classes. They actually wanted me to come in and teach a history class in Hawaii, but I wasn't there long enough to do it. But it would be a great opening for people who have life experiences to come in and be available to teach in classrooms in specialties that they have. And I think it would be a wonderful way of using common sense to make our society better, to grow on examples of things that have worked and not do so much about this ideology stuff that really is destroying the family and everything else.
That is a magnificent idea. Could you remember, could you think about this, Stan, and, you know, teaching about the Vietnam War and actually having a couple of Vietnam veterans in the room about it?
Well, listen, when you become governor, put me on that committee, and we'll make it happen. All right?
We can't be promising jobs. We don't want to be doing that.
I don't even want to get paid. I just want to be, because I just think it's a great idea. I'm a senior citizen myself.
Yeah, I hear
I'd love to be in the classroom teaching history.
Wow.
Senator, could you explain to the listeners, because I know there's a misconception out there, so explain the intricacies of right to work versus not right to work, because there's a misconception that people don't understand of having a state be a right to work state.
Yeah, so the bottom line right now, obviously the unions have a, you know, very strong grip on people in businesses where there's a union, and you're compelled to force into the union. You know, and I have listened to the argument on the union side here. It's like, well, it's not fair. We're representing people who don't even pay dues. But on the other side here, those unions, almost to a fault, always back Democrats with money and support. And we saw the XL pipeline, you know, the pipeline that Biden killed coming out of Canada that would have saved us from buying Russian oil and gas. I know this is outside of Pennsylvania, but they endorsed Joe Biden, and then he put them out of business. And they're like, oh, where'd that come from? I mean, So the bottom line is you ought to have the right to work where you want to, and you ought to have the right to choose whether you want to be in that union or not and be coerced or compelled to be a member of a union that stands against your values personally, stands against your values culturally, and politically.
Well, you know, the funny thing, you just basically show the hypocrisy of them by saying exactly what you said. They want to force you to pay dues, but at the same time, they don't want to give you the choice of how that money is spent, that the union itself says, hey, I'm going to support the Joe Bidens of the world or the AOCs of the world, even though you may be a polar opposite of that, but your money is being used to support those that don't support what you believe.
Yes. And that's the problem. They've gone too far. They've politicized the union. You know, where were these unions during the shutdown? Did they fight for the people to get masks off their face? Some did. Most didn't. They stood aside and backed their guy in office. I mean, this is sickening to me. The unions have my grandpa Mastriano played a key role in some of the unions, you know, in New York City back in the 30s. I mean, his life was threatened by the, you know, wealthy business owners. My grandpa lost his fingers, you know, as a child laborer in unsafe conditions and working at a gear shop. And so I see the need for them, but is the need still there if they're nothing but politicized and working against the ideals that they're founded to support?
And again, I want to pound this home because I do this when I have this argument with people. We support the working men and women. It's not the rank and file union members that we are against. It is against union leadership that only has their interest at heart, not the people that are working in the union.
I want to make one point that kind of bothers me. I believe that you have to get up in the morning, whether you put dungarees on or you put a suit on or you put business casual on, and you have to go to work and report somewhere, or you have to be online and you have to produce something. You're a working person. The only people I know that don't really work are people in the Biden family. They just get paid for stuff for jobs that they have no idea what they're doing, and they get paid for it. I mean, so unless you're in the Biden family and you do those things, you're part of the working class, as far as I'm concerned. And I don't think we should draw this. We have so many people making enemies of different classes, different races, different religions, and everything else. We need to start breaking down and talking about the people that produce and who add to society at different levels. Obviously, some are more intelligent and can do better things and add more to the society. But let's honor all those people that work for whatever level that they're at, because they produce for society. And that, to me, is the most important thing.
Exactly correct.
No, I agree. And I've worked pretty menial jobs myself. You know, was a janitor for many years, worked behind a grill in a kitchen, was a dishwasher, worked in a pizza shop. I mean, so it doesn't matter what you do in life. Do it as best you can, and you know opportunities will come. This is a country that tends to reward, you know, merit. You know, it's meritocracy. You do well, we're going to advance you. But of course, Democrats are making it a climate where people don't want to work or don't need to work.
You know, just to update you on the latest shenanigans in Philadelphia. You know, Friday was Saturday. My wife and I and some friends, we decided to go in town for the first time in a year and a half. I mean, we actually had a driver because we were afraid to leave our car and walk to places because, you know, we know how bad things are in Philadelphia. So we had a great time. Everybody's smiling. We did salsa dance. We went to Brazil. We went to Cuba Libre. We had a great dinner. No mask. Everybody just having a great time. And of course, everybody was having a great time, and they were all talking about, well, Monday, the masks are coming back on because COVID's hanging over our head. It's like Rodney Dangerfield talking about, oh, you know, I see heaviness over my head. It's like it's hanging over your head. And then, of course, it comes into play. And, of course, everybody in Philadelphia who's got any common sense know that this is a BS regulation and has no purpose at all in life other than creating control. And, of course, now they're saying, hold on, we're not going to make it a mandate, but we're suggesting that you wear a mask and stuff like that. So this is the shenanigans that we get into in Democratic-controlled cities. There's just no common sense at all and no look at real science.
Exactly. You know, and the unions could have used their influence in Philadelphia to change that, you know, years ago, but they stood aside because they're backing a political party. So that this is just yet another reason why right to work makes sense in Pennsylvania.
Absolutely.
I agree 1,000%. I believe in the long run, right to work and would benefit not only the workers of Pennsylvania, but the taxpayers as well.
When you become governor, you will be picking a true medical doctor for the Secretary of Health, I assume.
Yes.
Okay, I just want to make sure. That's another in your plus columns, Senator. I've got this huge...
It's really not that hard, Ben. You know, my colleagues make it so easy. And just so you know, Levine was confirmed unanimously in the Senate, by the way. Unanimously.
And that was before you were there, correct? I just want to make sure people know
I
that.
Was there.
Yes, yes.
But yeah, a bit, you know, surprising. That would have been an easy no.
Well, you know, so let's talk about this. So why was it left to a junior senator to have to fight for the rights of the people of Pennsylvania?
You know, that really gets me. These people that do politics for a living, when it's their chance to stand up and fight for all the things they said they would fight for, and they stood aside. And you know, there are good people in Harrisburg. Not all the senators, not all the rest are bad. We know that. You've had some of great ones on your show.
Yes.
It's just not me. But the prevailing wisdom of many in leadership is they like status quo. They don't want to cast hard votes, not because they're hard, but they don't want to do anything to disrupt their chances of reelection. And so it's about reelection and keeping the job and raising money.
And that's why you need term limits
right
all over the place, because it's clear that, as Reagan said, both politicians and diapers need to be changed often,
yes,
for the same reason.
Well,
it's very simple.
And you know what's? But let's drive that point home. March of 2020, you were not even in office a year, and yet you were one of the lone voices that were standing up for the people of Pennsylvania.
Well,
I will tell you this. I remember you on the steps with a couple of your other colleagues, who I can't remember all their names, but there were people that stood with you. And there were thousands of people driving through Harrisburg that day. I'm doing interviews, standing, and there you are standing on a step, and I'm listening to you, and I go, I like that guy. That guy's got some guts. Then I find out that you were in the military, and I say, oh, okay, he's not going to back down at all.
But think about that. He's not even there a year.
He's got common sense. He thinks strategically. He's thinking about the future. He's thinking down the line. What's going to happen down the line if we do this? Where's the real science? Where's the data?
I understand. But again, I look at this and I go,
this is not,
you know, these people, and it's funny, a lot of them, and I know you're talking about some of the people that were standing behind him, but they were still standing behind him. Because I guess in their mind, they're saying, well, he's brand new, so if he gets screwed over by this, who cares? Let him be the voice. Yeah, look, I'm just telling you how some of these long-term politicians think. You know, it's that old saying. In that movie with Alec Baldwin, the Hunt for Red October, when the politician goes, I'm a politician. I'll kiss the baby and then I'll steal her lollipop or something like that, you know. So it's like the same thing, you know. It's like, but you were the lone voice that was willing to put a public face on what a lot of us were feeling about. And that, to me, speaks volume.
But why can't, I mean, you were just addressing things in common sense manner. In just taking it step by step. Where's the transparency? How are we doing this? Look at what it's doing to her. We've got to think about this before we do this. And all the data wasn't in yet. I think we're going to look back in history, as you and I both know, when we look back in history, and we're just going to scratch our heads and think, like, this is nothing more than like how they were handling the plague in middle Europe. I mean, we look like idiots. Human beings look like idiots of the way they did this.
You know, Senator, I mean, do you ever sit there and think back to where you were in March of 2020 and where you are now and how this journey has happened? I mean, give the people exactly sometimes when you sit back and think about this, where you were and where you are.
Yeah, I had no idea. All I saw was a crisis. And, you know, in the Army, you know, on the officer side, especially an NCO, we're trained to be problem solvers. And I watched our basic freedoms being attacked in a way I never imagined possible, that we have a governor shutting down the state, calling people non-essential. I mean, it was disgusting to me. And the fear and the curses he was speaking into people's lives and the confusion and his complete lack of preparedness. You know, I'm shutting down all these small businesses.
Except his cabinet business.
Thank you. So non-essential businesses on the Wolf-approved list was cabinet shops.
Right.
And all the cabinet stayed closed except Wolf Industries in York County. And one of them outside of my district went out of business, and guess who bought them out? I mean, this is disgusting to me. This is the kind of crap that happens in Russia or Venezuela, not America. And so when I saw this happening and people being destroyed and crushed, I was like, we got to do something about this. And so that brought this movement, now called the Walk Is Free People movement. You know, started as a reopen movement, and then it, you know, morphed into the freedom movement. And then now we have this statewide network. And so, you know, these guys, I know that one guy that Trump called a coward, he's spending $400,000 on a crappy hit ad on me. That's like 30 seconds. You know what? And people aren't going to buy it, because all they saw was none of these cats did anything when the state was shut down. It took a junior senator, and it took a lot of private citizens to step up and stand in the gap when these guys, with their millions of dollars that they could have used to help us pay for attorneys, that they could have used to help us pay for our rallies on the steps of the Capitol, but they stood aside when we needed them. They sipped their wine. They went to their country club to play golf while we are left holding the bag. And it thus is the case. And we built momentum on the reopen movement, and then we had the catastrophe of the election in 2020. And, you know, initially people stood with us, but as the pressure from the media got their talking points and orders from the DNC, the Democrat National Committee, and this is not conspiracy, that is a fact. And they started hitting anyone speaking up. Almost all of them fell away. There's just a handful of us left standing, but it was none of the people standing on stage wanting your vote for governor. They're all talk, no action.
Yep. Well, the funny thing is our mutual friend, Barry Casper, says that that former U.S. district attorney, he got trumpled. that's what Barry calls it. He said he got trumpled with Trump's non-endorsement, and so he's done. I mean, I don't know how he doesn't realize that he's even still in this race. It's over for him. But obviously, you continue on. You're bringing the message to the people, and of course, the people will decide if that's the message they want. I mean, that's how our democracy works. You don't get to pick your candidates in a committee, in a smoke-filled room, by having five people in a room decide who they're going to endorse or not endorse, or who's going to make the biggest contribution to a certain committee in Bucks County or Montgomery County, you know, that they can endorse a certain candidate because they make a contribution to that committee. The people are going to decide in the end.
I also want to say that when we get to November, whether we must turn away this social progressive movement, woke movement, that is destroying the inner sanctity of our country, the American dream, in such ways that we must defeat that, and we must stay on guard, because, as Reagan said, it only takes a generation. And we're seeing it happen. These people are vicious. They will do anything. They will cheat, steal. They will steal the lollipop from your baby. There's no doubt about it.
So, Senator, before we let you go, there's something coming up that I know you're working on. You're going to be doing a bus tour similar to the old whistle stop tours, I think. Can we discuss that a little bit?
Yes, absolutely. On the 9th of May, we'll begin a bus tour and circumventing the entire state for about a week. And we're going to hit, you know, the major metropolitan areas of Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. So, you know, we're taking a fight to the Democrats. And, of course, we'll be hitting the deep red areas of the state as well. So we're going to go from Philly to Pittsburgh to Erie and many places in between.
And you'll be ending in the city of Philadelphia?
We're going to end our campaign bus tour in Philadelphia the Saturday before the primary. I can't think of a better way to end the tour.
In the place where the birth of the country was founded.
Yeah.
Yeah. Birthplace of freedom, there in Philadelphia.
And we're going to be your goal basically is to bring freedom back to not only the citizens of Pennsylvania, but to give the rest of the country hope and inspiration as well.
Yeah, I do believe Pennsylvania is the light of the nation, and that light has been dimmed and almost put out by failed politics and politicians on both sides of the aisle, but especially by the Democrats, by their failed policies and their anti-freedom policies. So this bus tour is about restoring freedom and restoring hope.
Well, the Democratic Party is not the party of Jack Kennedy. I will tell you, Jack Kennedy couldn't even be endorsed by the Democratic Party today because, number one, he was against abortion. He was pro-life. He was a capitalist. He gave, if you remember, he gave one of the largest tax decreases when he came into office. He did so many positive things that were very almost Ronald Reagan-ish in his approach to things.
You know what would be great, Senator? When you do this bus tour, keep a track of what the cost of the diesel fuel is when you come across, and then we can compare it to what it would have been when President Trump was in office.
That's a great idea. Holy cow.
And
I might take you out to dinner now.
Let's drive the point home. So, well, again, thank you, Senator, for being on the show, as you've been a stalwart every week since March of 2020, and we'll talk to you again next week.
What I appreciate is your loyalty, but you're willing to talk to all of us that listen to the station, and we do have a pretty good listening group. Thank you for the conversation. It's like talking over the kitchen table.
Yep.
You know?
It is. And these won't end when I'm governor, by the way.
I appreciate that.
We appreciate that very much.
Well, thank you, Senator, and we'll see you next week.
Let's bring it home.
Yep. Thank you.
Yeah. Let's do it. Love you guys. Have a great weekend.
Take care. Right. Thanks. So everybody, obviously that was Senator Mastriano, we just want to say thank you for listening to the Conservative Voice, and please stay tuned for the next hour with Stan Casaccio and Vicky Lightcap. And of course, I guess I'll hang around.
Right, because Dom wants to hear my jokes.
That's right, for the Don't Back Down show here on WWDB 860 AM. See you next week.